Pyrrhus of Epirus. Pyrrhus loses a son. And when we left off the last time, Pyrrhus had grown weary of Sparta and the opportunity that appeared in Argos. There was a feud between two politicians, Orestius and Aristippus. And of course, this gave Pyrrhus an opportunity to get involved in some more Greek politics, and he never was worried about leaving other people behind. So he ultimately received an offer from Orestius. So Pyrrhus broke off his Spartan campaign and began marching to Argos. The Spartans, however, were not prepared to let him leave so easily. Arius and his troops harassed the Epirots while they were on the march, setting frequent ambushes and constantly attacking his rear guard. One of Pyrrhus' seers had predicted that, due to a series of ill-omened sacrifices, that Pyrrhus would lose a family member. While Pyrrhus was leading his army through a narrow defile, the Spartans made yet another attack on his rear guard. In the excitement of the moment, Pyrrhus reputedly forgot this warning. He ordered his son Ptolemy, along with a force of cavalry, to drive off the Spartan attackers. Now, Ptolemy had a reputation of daring bravery, almost equal to that of his father. The historian Justin relates that Ptolemy was, quote, said to be so brave and enterprising that he took the city of Corcyra with only 60 men. In a naval engagement, too, he is reported to have leaped from a boat with 7 men into a 50-oared galley and taken and kept possession of it, end of quote. In keeping with his character, Ptolemy threw himself into the fighting. The Spartans recognized the prince, and they selected a picked band to attack him. One of the Cretan mercenaries, brought back by Arius, a man of stout arm and swift foot, ran up on one side of the prince as he was fighting spiritedly and struck him and laid him low. Ptolemy's death demoralized his troops, and they were driven off by the Spartans. Elated by their success, the Spartans pursued the fleeing Epirots, cutting many down. Their commanders appear to have lost control of their troops, for like Pyrrhus, the Spartans did not normally pursue a beaten enemy too far or too hard. They advanced through the pass and onto the open plain beyond. Here they were in turn ambushed and cut off by Pyrrhus's infantry. Pyrrhus had just learned of the death of his son. In the torment at his death and at his own role in it, he led the charge against the killers himself. His grief supposedly made him invincible and terrible beyond all previous feats of arms. In his blood rage, he killed the Spartan commander and his entire bodyguard until he had sated himself with Spartan blood. These losses caused the Spartans to break off their attacks, and Pyrrhus was able to complete the rest of his march unmolested. When Ptolemy's body was brought to Pyrrhus, he was supposed to have said, with a grim fortitude worthy of a Spartan mother, he had not been killed so soon as he had feared or his own rashness deserved. Pyrrhus had celebrated his son's funeral with a great fanfare and the usual athletic contests. With these rites performed, he then continued his march on Argos. On arrival before the city, Pyrrhus found that Antigonus had occupied the heights above the plain. The following day, he sent a message to Antigonus calling him a robber and challenging him to come down onto the plain and fight him for the kingdom. Such challenges actually were not very unusual. Alexander had actually issued one to Darius the night before the Battle of Gaugamela, or Arbela. The winner of such a battle could then legitimize his rule over the, quote, spear-won, end of quote, land. This concept was the underlying validation of all of the successor kingdoms. Antigonus was much more cautious and less vainglorious of a character than Pyrrhus. He was more inclined to settle differences by other methods than force of arms. After his defeats in Macedonia, his army was certainly much smaller than that of Pyrrhus's. He therefore declined Pyrrhus's challenge, informing him that many roads to death lay open to Pyrrhus if he was tired of life. While the two armies confronted each other, the Argives sent ambassadors to both kings. They requested that they withdraw and allow the city of Argos to become neutral. Antigonus agreed and handed over one of his sons to the Argives as a hostage. Pyrrhus had also agreed to retire, but made no firm pledge. Both the Argives and Antigonus, naturally enough, suspected Pyrrhus's lack of good faith. Well, a number of omens had encouraged Pyrrhus to attack the city. He was, more realistically, also encouraged by his allies within the city. They had agreed to betray it by opening one of the gates during the night. Once Antigonus had retreated, Pyrrhus put his plan into effect. Whatever the considerations that led Pyrrhus postponing a night attack on Sparta were, they do not appear to have applied to Argos. Perhaps the active participation of a fifth column within the city made the choice too good to refuse. So during the night, Pyrrhus was able to infiltrate his Galatians into the city. They came in through an opened gate, took possession of the marketplace. The gate was, however, too small to allow the elephants to enter with their towers on. Their handlers were forced to take the towers off and then put them back on once the animals were inside. The darkness and the confusion that this entailed caused considerable delay. The Argives, learning of the attack, sounded the alarm. They then rushed to secure the strong points within the city and sent messages to Antigonus. Due to his suspicions of Pyrrhus's good faith, Antigonus had not withdrawn very far and had kept his army on alert. Antigonus quickly marched back to the city. Prudently, he remained outside the walls, sending a relief force under one of his sons into the city. Arrius came with a force of 1,000 lightly armed Spartans and Cretans. The Argives, assisted by their allies, launched an attack on Pyrrhus's Galatians. Meanwhile, Pyrrhus had forced a way into the city by way of one of the gymnasiums, and his men gave their battle cry, but they received only a weak response from the hard-pressed Celts, which is a problem. So that would indicate to Pyrrhus that things were not going very well. If you talk about attacking a city at night, particularly a walled city, these streets are pretty narrow. The fact that they had to take the towers off the elephants to get them in the gate and then go through the incredible mess of having to put those towers back on the elephants indicates the real problem that existed. Also, just because people let you into the city, coming in at night, if you're not familiar with what the city is on the inside, and Argos has quite a bit of water features in it. So if you're going down the street and you don't see the water features, this can cause all sorts of trouble in organization, fighting. Streets are going to be relatively narrow. You're not really well capable of seeing who's attacking you from where. So it has all of the indications that a disaster could take place. And needless to say, that's what's going to happen. He is going to have a disaster because his attack on Argos is going to be his last attack. Now, the sources for this, we have Pyrrhus of Epirus by Champion, Plutarch's Lives by good old Plutarch, Wars of Alexander's Successors, Volume 1 and 2 by Bennett and Roberts, History of Rome by Livy, War in the Hellenistic World by Sherratus. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.